Blog Talk Radio.
Spend some time in the country, we're glad that you dropped by. Spend some time in the country, leave your worries behind. There's lots of fun for everyone, the best in music too. Spend some time in the country, we've been waiting here for you. Here in the country, waiting here for you.
You found the place for up close and personal interviews with your favorite country stars. This is In the Country, hosted by Dave Woods. Stay tuned for great stories and great music. Now live from Ontario and heard around the world, welcome to the show.
Singer, songwriter, musician, producer, Canada's J.K. Gully is my featured guest on this edition of In the Country. Get set for a show filled with great stories and special songs from this multi-talented and award-winning music maker. Let's welcome J.K. Gully to the program. Hey, J.K.
Hey, Dave. It's good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's good to hear from you as well. Great to have you on the show and to share these stories. I was reading up on the bio, a lot of the stuff I knew and a lot of stuff I didn't know. So we've got a lot of information to share and great career highlights to get to.
Well, I've been around a wee bit.
Yeah, I didn't mean that to make it sound like you've been doing this a while.
Yes, I have. Yeah, I've been in music all my life, country music in particular, for the most part of my life, and still involved in country music and other genres as well as a singer, songwriter, producer. And I have traveled a wee bit, seen all the states except for two, and Canada as well, and Europe and Australia. And I have put a few miles on these chucks.
And those boots and the guitar as well. Yeah. I remember hearing it long before we met a few years back now, but on CFGM back in the day when they were playing your songs and you were coming out as an artist, and it was great. So I always remembered the name. And at that time, you were an artist, but always doing songwriting as well, of course, and always with the guitar.
Yes, yeah, that's right, CFGM days. I used to be on their hockey team, too, playing goal for them after my goalie days with the Barry Colts in my younger years. Yeah, CFGM used to play my records. The first guy, actually, that ever played a record of mine was Bill Johnson out of Ajax. I don't know if you remembered him or not, but he played a song that I recorded called Stay, Lady, Stay, and I was working with Ronnie Prophet at the time, who was a great entertainer that I admired, and he put a song on his label that I recorded with Joe Bob Barnhill in Nashville, who I was writing for at the time, and I took it in, took the vinyl 45 into Bill Johnson, and to introduce myself, he didn't even listen to it. He said, come right in here, and he just put it right on the air. No musical directors, no program directors, just played it right there.
Wow.
That was exciting.
That's a pretty cool way of doing it. Now, what was that like to hear it on the radio for the first time?
Oh, it was awesome. You can imagine. It was my very first record. And like I say, I've been living in Nashville writing for Joe Bob Barnhill. And this particular song actually was a song that was on hold for a George Strait record but never made it. And I ended up cutting it myself and putting it out. And that was my first single, a Canadian single.
Wow. Now, can you take us back to when you first got into music, just as a young guy, and found the guitar and got into songwriting and sort of began this journey?
Well, my father was my biggest influence, and I used to watch him when I was young playing guitar, and also some of my cousins at the old Gully farm. And my father was my biggest influence, and I wanted to play guitar like him, so I used to sneak under the bed and get his Fender Jazzmaster and pull it out quietly and try to do a few things. And one day when I showed a little more particular interest than others, and I was about 12 years old, he started showing me a few notes and wrote a few tunes out for me. And I think El Paso was the first song he showed me, and Puff the Magic Dragon. So there was no turning back from there. And after he got me started on particular interest like that and learning some basics, teaching me some chords, and he introduced me to Chet Atkins. He said, you got to have a listen to this guy. And he was a soft-spoken man and never pushed anything on anybody. And he played me this Chet Atkins record, and he said, you know, those finger pickers are pretty good. That's all he had to say. And I switched from the flat pick that he played and put a thumb pick on and just wore out about 75 vinyl records of Chet Atkins over my first 4 or 5 years of being introduced to him. So in the old days, you had to put the needle down on the record and listen to it for about 2 bars and pick it up real quick and try to learn what he did. And I did that for about 4 years to learn how to play guitar.
Those are the good old days for sure. And what's the drive to master the guitar? I mean, some people play the guitar and play a few chords and play well, but you've gotten to that point where you're exceptional and can really play, and a lot of your songs feature those moments where you're playing the guitar and it's really standing out. What's that driving you to do that?
Well, for me, it was, again, just the admiration of my my father, and then him introducing me to Chet Atkins, and the admiration, hearing that I could do something. But really, it was the influence of my father was the biggest influence, and the family, again, a lot of family played music. My grandfather played, which a song we'll hear a little bit later in the show. Played harmonica, and my grandmother played piano and pump organ for some of the dances way back. Of course, I never heard my grandmother play, but my grandfather used to pull out the mouth organ and play a few harmonica tunes every now and again and laugh.
Yeah.
So he was a big influence, and my dad and those folks influenced all my cousins to pick up an instrument. And I have quite a few cousins that play, and we have a family thing every year called Gully Fest that, again, I can talk a bit more about Willie and Gene come and gets fired up there.
Definitely, yeah, we'll get into that for sure. Now, through all these years of writing and having your songs recorded by other artists, do you have a favorite song that you've written? I know it's always hard to choose from a long list of songs, but do any come to mind?
Two, actually. One that we're going to play today, Willie and Gene, and a song that I wrote for my father called In My Father's Field. I'm not featuring it today, but it was recorded by a hero of mine who's a big influence as well later in music, when is John Cowan, that used to sing for Newgrass Revival.
Right.
And I got the privilege of writing and meeting and writing with John and playing a few gigs with him a few years back, and he's an incredible singer, and he recorded a version of my song In My Father's Field, and you can actually find that on YouTube. It's all over the place. It's on one of his albums. He's recorded 3 of my songs, actually. I've been really, really privileged to have him like my songs. I don't know how I've connected with him spiritually and in this music sense, and he's actually got a couple of mine right now that he's considering for more recordings, so it's a real blessing to have someone of that talent sing your song. So that those two songs, In My Father's Field and Willie and Gene, are my two favorites.
That's great, and we're going to share Willie and Gene a bit later in the show. Now, another artist who recorded one of your songs, a really special song called Honor Thy Fallen, is John McDermott, an international singing star. I was on YouTube earlier hearing another song that he was singing, and he's got such a beautiful voice, and you really hear the accent when he sings.
Yeah, John, that song I co-wrote for a lady, I'd like to mention her name, Karen Eaton, and she lives in Barrie, and we'd originally wrote that song for her project. I produced a project for her in Barrie at the power plant when it used to be a studio. When I lived in Barrie and worked out of that studio. And Karen wanted to write a song that would honor servicemen that had fallen in the line of duty, and it started from an idea of a friend of hers, I believe, that was talking about a police officer that had gotten killed in the line of duty. And so we got talking about the song, and we thought, you know, it would be really good and appropriate for us to write this so that it honors all servicemen and women that have, fallen in the line of duty for their families. And
right.
Just a little tribute to firemen and police officers and frontline and military, of course, these days, at the time there wasn't actually any wars going on, but now it's so appropriate that it honors all our servicemen that have fallen in the line of duty. So that was she had a connection with John, and John agreed to come in and record that. So I produced tracks for that session, with John's band, actually, and he came in and sang it. Now, unfortunately, with John's cut, nothing really happened with that. We're hoping that it would get on an album, but nothing has really happened with John's cut. More recently, I met a really great singer from Guelph by the name of Javon Rutter, who actually is in the military, in the reserves, I believe. And he recorded a version of that has actually been released and out there. I sent it to American Veteran Radio, of all places, a couple of weeks ago, and the guy flipped over it, so it's being played down there. So I want to thank Karen Eaton, who is a really good friend of mine, and going through some struggles on herself right now, and wish her the best, and our prayers are with her in her recovery. So that's a great song, inspired and written with Karen Eaton.
That's terrific, J.K., and it's really something to write songs like you write that song you just mentioned and these other ones, writing songs that have a great meaning to them and probably help people through certain times in their lives that maybe they're struggling with, and they can find comfort in these songs and kind of a peace in them as well.
Yeah, that's important to me. I'm probably maybe a little stronger on that side than I am on the commercial side. As much success as I've had in the commercial side of writing, that part always comes out in my writing. And when I write that way, they tend to be more personal and sort of try to have a spiritual message like that, an uplifting message if I can. And that's sort of myself as a singer-songwriter. Those are the songs that mean the most to me, for sure.
Right. Yeah, and some of the other songs along the way that you've had recorded by artists, great Canadians like Jamie Warren, Ronnie Prophet, mm-hmm. Eddie Eastman, Marie Buttrell, I remember her again from CFGM days and so forth.
Absolutely,
Paul and
yeah.
Amy in there. Yeah, great performers. And John Landry, the song with him was on the radio all the time in the video on CMT, of course, Fantasy Island. That was a great tune.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I've been really fortunate to have a lot of great Canadian artists record my songs. From the very first song I had recorded, it wasn't a Canadian artist. Actually, it was Charlie Louvin of all people. But it was through a Canadian record company. I'd met when I was with a band, my very first band, Dusty Road, a little trio. We used to back up all these people like Orville Prophet, Ronnie Prophet, Carol Baker. Actually, with Dusty Road, I'm with Carol now still, but I met Carol through Dusty Road. But Orville Prophet, Ronnie Prophet, there's a bunch of people. Myrna Laurie, going way back. I had a lot of experience. Marie Buttrell, we did a lot of road work. Eddie Eastman, a lot of those people we did backup work for. And I've had songs cut by those people in that era with Marie and Eddie Eastman and Ronnie Prophet. And so I've been really fortunate that way. And I'm still continuing to get songs cut by some great Canadian artists, and I've been fortunate enough to be able to write with some of these folks, and still getting songs released by Canadian artists. Jamie Warren, was like you mentioned, and John Landry, and more recently, I've got a great cut out there by a band from Kingston by the name of Ambush. It's got a song called
"Right
Girl" that's really doing well, and it's a great, great band they are, and a great bunch of guys. And I actually have a Christmas song coming out with them as well called My First Christmas Without You. It's just released, so it's actually the very first Christmas song that I've ever had released.
Oh, terrific.
First one I've written, really.
So. Oh, wow, that's great. Yeah, it's something a little new. And, of course, we encourage our listeners to request both those songs. Their song, My Little Girl, the group, of course, is Ambush, and My First Christmas Without You. And you wrote My Little Girl. That was with Mark McDonald from the group?
Yes, with Mark. All three, both of those songs were with Mark. I also wrote In This Room with Mark, which was a couple of years ago they released as well, and had a nomination for a CMT Video Award for that. So they're doing really cool, and it's really great to write with Mark. They're all great guys and great players and singers and a bunch of clowns.
Now, you were also connected.
They're a great party band.
You were also connected with Steve Wilkinson, I guess, before the big days of the Wilkinsons hitting it big. You were doing some writing with him and, I think, doing a little producing of his stuff?
Yeah, so in my days with Warner Chappell, I was signed with Warner Chappell, and through a friend of mine that I was writing with at the time, Bill Wallace, and his daughter Lonnie, we were producing a record for them. that ended up going to MCA Records. Lonnie got a record deal with MCA at the time, and through them, Bill was writing with Steve, and I also met Steve on a songwriting contest that I was hosting in Kingston. And so when I was with Warner Chappell, I was working with them, you know, in their very early development days. And the kids were awesome talents back then when they were 8 and 10. And I think it's always really,
Very cool. Well, let's turn to your music now. And that's what we're here to feature, of course, and actually hear it. This is a great song called Fortunate Man. You're singing on it. And can you talk about the writing behind it, JK, and a bit about the song, and then we'll share it.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. This song was originally cut by Colin Amy. This is a my own singer-songwriter demo that I put together, the rewrite of the song, actually. But it originally came to me when Colin was working with Rick Hutt at Cedar Tree. And I was there, like I mentioned, working with Cedar Tree a lot. I do a lot of guitar work for Rick Hutt on his projects. And writing with the artist as well, any chance I can get. So Colin brought this song, this verse of this song that he had going, and it just struck me immediately. It took me about 5 minutes to write the chorus, and we called it Fortunate Man. And Colin cut this song on his album, and we actually had the first version of this song on hold with Emerson Drive last year, and they had it for like 9 months, but as can happen in the music industry, their management camp changed and their direction changed, and something happened in the swing of things, and they haven't really cut that song yet. So it's sort of, we're out there pitching it again. And I played this song at a song seminar for Steve Seskin, who is a huge, big hit songwriter and written some great songs. I'm trying to think of the title, Tim McGraw stuff. Grown Men Don't Cry. Just incredible songs. He wrote Life's a Dance. And anyway, just to get some feedback on this song at this seminar, and it was one of those duh moments that he said, well, why don't you start that song with the title? Because in the original version, it wasn't starting with the words Fortunate Man, and it was one of those writer moments of duh. You know, if it was somebody else's song and I was the producer listening to it, I might have said the same thing, but at that point had been cut once. It's on hold with Emerson Drive, but as soon as he said that, it was like, you know what? I really appreciate you saying that. So I rewrote the chorus so that it would begin with the title. Constantly looking to improve my writing in any way I can. So it just sort of opened the whole thing up, and so I rewrote it and did this new demo that for my own purposes. So I hope you enjoy it. It's acoustic little demo, and it's called Fortunate Man, and I'd like to send it out to my family that are actually enjoying American Thanksgiving right now. And that's the story behind the song. It was written at Thanksgiving. And you'll see in the song that it mentions that. So I sent it out to Janet and Joel, my brother and sister, and Tim, and my cousin Dave and Cindy, all down and having an American Thanksgiving right now. So this is called Fortunate Man.
This is J.K. Gully on In the Country.
Sometimes I complain to God about what I ain't got. I wish I had a bigger house, a better job, a lot more pay. And sometimes I doubt myself, wishing I was someone else. A little taller, a little stronger, a little wiser than I am. Then I see the writing on the wall, the picture that we took last fall. It was Thanksgiving Sunday, we were gathered for one and all. And then it hit me, I'm a fortunate man, a lucky man, doing the best that I can. And I can be proud of who I am. Got a great life I live, a lot of blessings and gifts. I have friends, a family, and I'm holding a whole world love in the palm of my hands. I'm a fortunate man. I hope that in the end, there's someone waiting round the bend to tell me that I've done some good, made a difference when I could. 'Cause there's only so much time to soak up the sweet sunshine, sing and dance when we can, appreciate what we have. And I'm a fortunate man, a lucky man, doing the best that I can. And I can be proud of who I am. I've got a great life where I live, a lot of blessings and gifts. I have friends, a family, and I'm holding the whole world of love in the palm of my hands. I'm a fortunate man. There's a lot of other places I could be, yeah. Oh, but there's a reason I'm here. I'm just a little part of a bigger scheme, and that's all right by me. That's okay, 'cause I'm a fortunate man, a lucky man, doing the best that I can. And I can be proud, I got a great life where I live, a lot of blessings and gifts. I have friends, family, and I'm holding the whole world of love in the palm of my hands. You know I got love in the palm of my hands. I'm a fortunate man. I'm a fortunate man.
Canada's J.K. Gully and Fortunate Man here on In the Country, a great acoustic performance. Now, J.K., is that a way you really enjoy to deliver songs? I mean, we can do the things with the full band, but to deliver something just with the guitar and a vocal?
I really enjoy that, yeah. And then even any of my production since about 1995 has been, I had a single out called Leah, has been very acoustic sort of set.
Yeah.
The last cut on my Blue Jeans Boy album, when I had an album out with BMG RCA in the early 90s, and the last cut was actually Willie and Gene, and most of the material on the album was very new country with full band, and but the very last cut was Willie and Gene, which I decided to do very acoustically, and from that moment on, it was like, you know, this is the right format for me as a singer-songwriter. So I have some production with some drums, but it's usually very light brushes and kind of groovy kind of things like that, so a little less what you might call mainstream radio commercial. It's a little more acoustic Americana sounding.
Yeah, that's a great sound. Now, on the songwriting side of things, you, of course, co-write with a lot of people. In general, because we have a lot of singer-songwriters who listen, can you think of things you've seen over the years, weaknesses in songs, you know, before they're at that point where they're ready to cut and get demoed? What are some of the common areas that people are needing to know to brush up on their songs, make them better?
Yeah, that's a whole show, isn't it?
Yeah,
as a
exactly.
producer, well, as a writer, it's writing is a difficult thing. If you know, if writing great songs were easy, everybody'd be doing it. So it's something that you have to work on. Almost, if you have the talent and the inspiration to to be able to get something out quick. That's my first recommendation, is to do that. Get it down and record it on something, you know, a small recorder, always while you're writing, and write everything down as it's coming, stream of conscious. But after that, really, writing is a lot of editing and a lot of hard work at following things up. And there's so many books that you can read. I've read a lot of books. I've studied other people's songs and trying to figure out their rhyming schemes and their, you know, the rhythm cadences. That all inspires me in writing songs. And there is a format. There's a, you know, there's a framework that you have to stay within to create a song that's going to be at least acceptable and listenable to people. Nobody really knows whether it's going to be a hit, but people can sort of tell right away in the industry, or even people, whether it's a really good song or not, and whether it connects and continues to connect. So one of the things to answer your question is that focus is a really difficult thing in songs. It's like, it's so easy to move off the track and start using words and things that don't relate to what you're talking about. They call them red herrings,
right?
Or Uncle Fred just walked in the room. It's like, where'd he come from? You know, it's like little things. Like, there's so many things that you know, better songwriters than me could describe better. But I've been to lots of seminars and things, and listened to people talk about you know, the structure of songs. And for me, the lyric is the hardest part. Music part and the melody has always come easy. If I get a melody in mind, I can usually have the song, that part of it, written within, you know, a half an hour, and be very comfortable with it being fairly strong, minus a few touch-ups as the lyric goes in. The lyrics are always the most difficult. There's a lot of editing to get that down, and there's a lot of different styles to write a lyric in, whether it's an in-your-face Nashville lyric that really tells a story, or whether it's a little more ambiguous, you know, in an emotional or spiritual quality. There are different styles on how that lyric goes, and it's really easy to lose focus. So just
sure.
Lots of hard work.
That's
keep editing and be really objective. And it's always great when your family says they really like a song, but that's not the professional judge of whether the song is as good as it could be. Just like The Fortunate Man's a perfect example. Colin Amy, that I wrote it with, is a great writer, great singer, and we worked hard on that song, and you know, he cut it. Emerson Drive had it on hold. Publishers were loving the song, and yet it still had room to improve. So
there you go. So there's always room for rewriting and getting every part of it as great as it can be. Do you have a dream pitch in mind? I'm sure you've thought of this over the years. An actor or an artist out there, even if they're not, you know, because they're at
James
the top
Taylor.
Of the charts. But
he's the only
James
one
Taylor,
left.
There we go.
It would have been Chet Atkins or Jerry Reed, but unfortunately they're both gone. James Taylor is definitely my, you know, it would be pretty amazing if I could ever have him sing one note of my song.
Yeah, and we can definitely, when we hear you sing and play, we can hear those influences there and a similar kind of style. Now, have you ever written a song with him in mind?
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I have. Stylistically wise, there are things that, again, inspirational wise, when you're a player and a writer, you just pick up the guitar and stuff starts happening. So if something's coming out from one of your influences, then there are songs that come out that way, and I have a project of my own that has, you know, even more James Taylor type influences as far as chords go and things like that. But the trick is not to write another James Taylor song. But he influences me, and I've been influenced by Merle Haggard and George Jones, and I love bluegrass, and I've been influenced by a lot of bluegrass and John Cowan. So there's, you know, quite a mix of things. But specifically when I'm writing, sometimes you are specifically writing to say, you know what, this song would be great for George Strait, or this would be a great thing to write for James Taylor. So you just go with it.
Right.
And other times you just write the song the way it's going for yourself.
Exactly. And then that becomes a song maybe meant more just for you, or it could relate to somebody else as well.
Yeah, hopefully they can always relate to other artists, but there's like you mentioned, there are specific things that you're going to write for, thinking on, especially as a professional songwriter. Like I've been signed with two publishing companies, Warner Chappell and BMG, and my job was to try to write songs that would get cut and get on the radio and get cut by other artists. So as that kind of professional writer, you sit in a room and you try to write a song specifically for someone. In my early Nashville days, it was, like I say, I had a George Strait cut, and I'm sorry, a George Strait hold. I wish I had the cut. Never got cut. Things like
that.
So in Nashville, I was writing to try to get those major artists to record my songs. So, and I still do that when I get the opportunity. And other times when I'm producing or developing, I really enjoy artist development and songwriting development, working with new artists to do that. So I'm working to try to improve their song so it works for them. So, they'll bring me an idea or something they started, and now my job is to say, not write a song for me. It's like, well, how can I make this work for you? So I put that hat on. I do that a lot out of my home studio here.
Yeah, I was going to turn to that subject as far as the hats you wear. We've talked about songwriting and, of course, as a musician, but the other hat is as a producer and a talent developer. So can we touch on that? Maybe start off
Absolutely.
By letting people, who don't, we all hear the word producer in terms of music, but what exactly is the role of a music producer?
Well, I believe the role of a music producer is to create some music for a particular artist that you're working with. A sound that really works for them, that will bring attention to their talents. People with talent, my job is to organize and direct the project. And again, much like a song, keep focus on making the artist stand out for them. So it's picking the songs, writing the songs, and then cutting the tracks. It's all going to fit into a project that, says who that artist is at that particular moment in time.
So you really have to know the artist well and get to know them so that, as you said, you can represent them and understand what style is best for them and how to get that out of them.
Yeah, in my case, that's true, because I like to take my time. There's lots of things that artists can do. People can run into studios and run to Nashville. There are studios up there that'll take your money and they'll do your record. But in my case, I really, really think that pre-production and development is the most important part, especially of the very first record that anybody's going to do or the very first demo to present to the industry. You have to put something forward that's going to get some attention, because there are just, millions of artists out there and so much music that what are you going to do to develop yourself? Most people, as me and Rick have talked about it before, get in a big hurry to fail, and they don't take the time to really flush out the songs and work on their vocals, do all the most important things. A lot of times they take the money, they go and do tracks, and they get about 5 minutes to do vocals, and everybody says, there's your record, y'all come back now. and it's like not to say that they haven't got a decent product, but it usually doesn't do a lot to focus on them, what makes them special. And I think that's really important. The pre-production and the time spent before you cut the tracks is more important than the tracks, because it saves money in the long run and gets you a better product.
That makes a whole lot of sense, because I'm sure most people want to get the record done and try to get it out there and all that. But you've really got, as it gets back to, as you mentioned with the songwriting, it's a lot of work involved and a lot of time, but better to put the time up front and get it done right than to have a product that is not great, or maybe it doesn't represent who you are.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I totally believe that. It's no different than even in high level of sports. It's the same thing. People, talent is in junior hockey, and then they're in the American League. Yeah. Not many make it to the NHL immediately, and they go through a development stage, and no matter how good you are. So some people fail to realize that in the music industry, and they just get in too big of a hurry to cut their songs too quick.
Now, it must be pretty exciting when you're developing the new talent and working on a project to do that. It's something maybe different from songwriting, unless that's part of what you're doing in that case, but you're actually, helping someone get that start in their career and getting it right.
Well, it's very rewarding, and yes, you do make friends, because you're spending a lot of time with these people, and they're trusting you, and you're trusting them, because it's a collaboration. I'm there to guide and direct, but it's really about them finding out who they are, and I'm educating them with my experience, but they're also educating me with something new. Every talent has something to offer, so I try to learn from that as well. So
Yeah. And we're going to get to a song in a moment from Matty Haskell, who you're working on a project with now and developing that. But in general, how would you go about finding your talent? I mean, are there singer-songwriters listening who are interested in, you know, having a project produced by you or even just doing demos? Is that something that you do?
Yes, it is. They can reach me and submit. They can contact me anytime. info@jkgully.com is my email. I'm not hard to find. I'm on Facebook. Absolutely. Yep. And it is strange how you find talent. I was playing a little what they call a jamboree with a sort of a traditional country band for the last few years out at the Mississauga Legion just to have some fun. With some old friends of mine, we had a steel player and a fiddle player and sort of like a little bit of throwback to the old days, doing lots of the old country, which I love, used to play when I was growing up, and it was just nice to get out and play again like that. And a young lady from Mississauga came in, and it was a jamboree, so people get up to sing, and we backed them up. And this young lady by the name of Caitlin Cozell came in. I thought, boy, she sings really good traditional stuff, and I just mentioned to her, like, if you ever think of recording, give me a shout. And she did, and I've been working with her for 2 years, and we've got about 7 songs written towards her mainstream commercial album. But she does such a nice job on traditional music that we decided, you know what, most people do traditional albums at the end of their career, we're going to do one at the beginning of yours. So she, awesome. We've been working on that too. We've got a double CD working towards a lot of great traditional country and traditional gospel songs.
Good.
I'm really, really enjoying it. She's a beautiful young lady, and I love her dearly, and she's really dedicated to what she's doing, and we're very close to being cutting songs. Hopefully in the new year we can cut some tracks on all this pre-production we've done. So, and
very
Matty
cool.
Haskell,
great to know that.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say on that note, it's great to know that young people are still interested in traditional country music and are working towards an album of it like you're doing there.
Exactly. In her case, that's the case. And in Maddie's case, she was I hooked up with her through Michelle Wright. Maddie's from Chatham, and she was went to a Michelle Wright show and was talking about doing some music. And Michelle said, "Well, talk to J.K. Gully because he, you know, develops talent."
Yeah.
So I met her through Michelle Wright, and we've been working together a long time now, and just sort of all come to fruition to cut this project down in Nashville. A couple of years ago, we actually cut the tracks, but it was about 3 years of cutting songs and demos and working on tracks to see what was right for her. Now, Maddie is not a traditional country singer. She's got a lot of influences, Motown blues influences, jazz influences. She's a very unique artist. This particular song we're going to play is probably the most country. It's very acoustic sounding. It was another song of mine that was cut by John Cowan, actually. And she's a big John Cowan fan. When I introduced her to John Cowan, she just flipped over this guy. And she's really been influenced by him and Mavis Staples and Etta James and Jonelle Moss, or another great blues artist from Nashville. So Maddie has this this great record called 10, 2, and 6 that we cut. And it started out because when I lived in Nashville, I worked with a bass player in my early days that now works for Mark Knopfler. So he had a really cool band that used to work at the Bluebird Cafe called the Blue Bloods, a bluesy band. And in that band was himself on upright bass, and John Gardner, who played for the Dixie Chicks, and James Taylor, of all people, but tons of those kind of artists. And Reese Wine and Stevie Ray Vaughan's keyboard player. B3 player.
Yep.
So they had such a cool band that I said to Glenn, you know what, one of these days I'm going to have an artist that's going to be just right for you guys to cut a record. And then when Maddie came along and we sort of got the songs going, I said, you know what, this would be perfect for those three guys to cut these tracks. So we went down to Nashville and I sat on the floor with them, and we had all the songs prepared, and we cut pretty well the whole album of tracks in the one day with these three awesome players. And kept going back to Nashville to do the overdubs. And on this particular album, there are some incredible singers, like the legendary gospel singers, the McCrary sisters are on here, Becca Bramlett singing on it, John Cowan singing on it, just Jonelle Mosser. There's some amazing singers on this album. And It's a really cool album with the horn sections, string sections, and this particular cut is a song that that she likes to dedicate to her dad. It's called "Back to Your Arms," and it was cut by John Cowan, and it's she's just an incredible singer.
Let's share it now, J.K. This is Maddie Haskell and "Back to Your Arms" on In the Country.
What do I do when there's no way out? Trapped by the way of this world, I go back to your arms. Back to your arms. Where do I go when the road ends? Can't find my way around the wall. I go back to your arms, back to your arms. Back in your arms, I am close to your heart, where I'm wrapped in the love.
A beautiful song from Maddie Haskell here on In the Country. It's called "Back to Your Arms," written by J.K. Gulley. Now, beautiful song there, J.K. And you talked about her influences, blues, roots, gospel, soul, folk, jazz. Is there a way to sum all that up? You know how we call someone a country artist? What label, if there is such a thing?
I don't know if there is a label, but it's Americana AAA, as if you want to put a format on it. Troubling things about music is formats for producers.
Right.
I should say it's easy for the general listening public, because they can define, and it's good for the record stores because they can define certain types of music that they perceive they want to listen to. But music,
right,
in the greater sense of the word, in the worldly sense of the word too, is you just cannot format all kinds of music. And that's kind of the closest we can get for Maddie is Americana AAA. You can play her certain songs of hers on a country station. You can play certain songs of her on a blues station. You can play certain songs of her on a folk station.
Right.
And a couple off the album, maybe one or two off the album on a rock station. She's got an incredible edge in her voice, like a Susan Tedeschi on some of the cuts. And there's big horn sections on some of these songs. It's just a fantastic album. So it's really difficult. There's a lot of music out there that people don't get to hear because there's such limited formats of music on radio.
Yeah.
So we really appreciate the, you know, folks, especially internet radio like this, that there's a better chance of just getting great music out there that people can hear. And we plan on releasing this album to Americana radio stations in the U.S. and to CBC and to satellite and things like that. But there really isn't a place, without being on a major record label, there isn't a place for us to put this record. The closest I could say that would work if we had the power of a major label behind us would be like an Amy Winehouse or a Julie Black or a Norah Jones or a Bonnie Raitt. She can fit into that category.
Right.
But there isn't a whole lot of room for that at Top 40 Radio if you're not on a major label. So in this case, we're pitching this record to the industry as best we can, and we're going to release it on our own label and you know, start getting it out there to the world through the internet and through Americana Radio, because there's a lot of festivals that this incredible artist can work that can be out there, blues festivals, you know, roots festivals, all kinds of country festivals that mix their music with other formats. So she's kind of a crossover artist because of all these great influences she's had.
Yeah, yeah. Great voice, great...
Thank you.
Great style, as you say, very diverse. Now, where can our listeners head to on the internet? They can hear other samples of her music, I suppose?
MattieHaskell.com, and it's MattieHaskell, MattieHaskell.com. The record is at CD Baby, and it's on
okay.
iTunes as well, so it's very accessible. So yeah, I discover this great, great new artist.
That is excellent. Yeah, and a lot of people now have discovered her, and I'm sure after hearing the song, we'll want to hear more of her stuff. So we'll encourage them to visit the website
so
and
much.
Check out. Yeah, it's terrific.
Yeah,
now, I want to talk about the CCMA Songwriters Cafe, which is going to this day.
Oh, yeah.
But you actually started this thing back in the day. Do you want to talk about that?
I actually did. I started, the first one we did was in Hamilton, at a CCMA in Hamilton, and I decided to get a whole bunch of songwriter friends together, and I asked the CCMA people if they had a venue we could do it at, and they said, yeah, they allowed me to put one together, and I had a whole bunch of songwriters show up, so we just started it, and then when we went to SoCan, who sponsored it for me through the CCMA. For 7 years, I was the host, and I just ran it at all the CCMA conventions for the time.
Yep.
So that's, and it's still going very strong now. So
that is awesome.
But I'm
and
not
along the way,
it
you,
anymore, yeah.
Right, but yeah, you got it off to a great start.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
you, along the way, you've won some SoCan and CCMA awards and also had a Juno nomination.
I did, yeah. I had a Juno nomination with an artist I actually produced a record and did a duet with her, Kimberly Richards, and we were nominated for Country Duo of the Year. I can't remember the year. It's like 95, I believe. And a CCMA award I got as Vista Rising Star, same year that Michelle Wright was up for it.
Wow.
I had a lot of really good... That was the year I won the SoCan award, too, because my BMG record got a lot of... lot of radio play. With I had five or six singles over the 2 years, and really received a lot of airplay on a song called Blue Jeans Boy and a bunch of other singles off that BMG record. So that's where I got that from.
Now, you're also an inventor along with all these other things in areas you're involved with. The Gully Hook. Can you talk about that? I went online and checked it out.
Well,
really cool.
It's a great thing for guitar players. If you buy an acoustic guitar, like I did, John Larrivee made me a couple of acoustic guitars. And the first thing you notice when you get a really nice acoustic guitar, it has no strap pin for a strap. And, you know, I didn't want to drill a hole in what you usually have to do in the smallest part of the neck, the most, you know, critical part of the neck on this beautiful guitar. I thought, what can I do? And it dawned on me. It's like, well, Willie Nelson has some kind of hook on his guitar that he runs underneath. So I went to the music store and bought this classical guitar hook. And I got it home and tried. I didn't like it because it didn't have any, when you put this classical guitar hook on, it has no balance. You can't let the guitar go. or it'll just fall forward. It's kind of a weird. It felt weird to me. So what I did is there was a little plastic hook on this classical guitar hook. I cut it off, and I had another strap with a piece of leather. Most leather straps come with this string of leather. In the end, you can tie it on to the top of the guitar, which I didn't like either because it gets in the way of your hands. So I put the hook on this piece of leather, and instead of pulling it underneath the guitar, I pulled it around the neck and around the front and hook it onto the sound hole. And I couldn't believe it. It balances perfectly and holds the guitar perfectly in place. So I had used my own makeup of that for about 5 years, and Harv Levy of Levy Leathers was at one of my songwriters' cafes at the CCMA's 1 year, and he's a songwriter, and he's seen this thing, and he said, "What is that?" I said, "I don't know. It's a gully hook." So he said, "I want to make that for you."
Wow.
So he's got it, and it's being made by Levy Leathers, and it's in their catalog, and I've got it out to as many retail stores as I can get it to, because it's kind of sitting in the catalog. It's an odd bird of a thing, but people that see it and like it, they really appreciate it, because you don't have to drill a hole in your guitar to put a strap pin in. You know, so most guitars come with a strap pin on the end part of the guitar, but there's none on the neck part, and so this eliminates the use of that strap pin and drilling a hole. You can just buy a gully hook, you hook it onto a regular strap, and then it goes around underneath the neck and around the front of the guitar, and hooks onto the sound hole and holds it perfectly in place.
Very cool, the gully hook.
Yeah.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Well, JK, let's as we get into our remaining moments, we have another song to play, which we're going to close out the show with. And let's talk about that now. The song is called Willie and Gene, and I know you wanted to talk about it, of course, and then we're going to share with our listeners as we close out the show.
Well, Willie and Gene, again, it was inspired by my grandfather. When my grandfather passed away, I was living in Nashville and I couldn't be home. Couldn't get back for his funeral, but my grandmother and grandfather have been big influences on me, as they were the rest of the family. They were wonderful people, and so I wrote a song for them called Willie and Gene, and I'm going to dedicate this song to my cousin Stuart and his family, who have just experienced the loss of their wife, their dear wife and mother. So I want this to go out to them. But this is a song that that Jilly used to request when I was when I go to Gully Fest and play this. Jilly likes this, and also my other cousin Mary Gully, who's recovering from surgery, and I'll send it out to her as well. So this is out to the folks, and this is called Willie and Gene, and I hope you enjoy it. It's about my grandmother and grandfather, who have been loved by the whole family.
And just before we get to it, JK, thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing the stories behind the songs, and also all the great career highlights. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, it's been my pleasure a lot, Dave. I really appreciate you asking, and it's been fun. I haven't done this for quite a few years. I've been doing a lot of studio work and things like that, which I really enjoy, but it's really nice to actually get out and have a few of my tunes played, and I really appreciate you asking.
For sure, yeah, my pleasure. Great songs. Great to hear your voice.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to mention, too, on this song is featured.
Please do.
I'm sort of, this song is being organized. I'm trying to organize a little bit of a family band I'm calling Cousin Gully, and the first member of that band is the guitar player that's featured on this. I'm playing actually a little bit of banjo on this, believe it or not, and the guitar player on this is my cousin Richard, and he's a phenomenal flat-top player. He actually won the Winfield, Kansas North American Flat-Top Picking Championship when he was 17, and I've always admired his talent, so he was gracious enough to come up and play on this song. So this is me and Richard, sort of the beginnings of Cousin Gully. This isn't a finished song. I got to get him singing on it and get a few more harmonies and a bit of bass on it. But this is sort of the raw demo of the new cut of Willie and Gene. So send this out to all the Gully family, and especially Stuart and his kids on this day.
This is J.K. Gully here on In the Country.
He was born on the land and raised by the sunshine. He would laugh at the rain. Oh, he never wore a frown. He'd play Wilson's clog on a worn-out harmonica, the life of the party, and always a clown. And Now Gene was a lady, so special to Willie. All eyes were on them as they danced round the floor. And Willie would wink, while Gene would just smile at him, knowing that she was the one he adored. So they pledged all their love to their God up above, and Gene could be heard as she cried. Come to me, Willie, my sweet charming Willie, I'm needing your loving today. Promise forever your hand and your heart, and Willie, don't ever go away. And though his laughter was heard through the hard times they lived in, there were times when a tear could be found in his eyes. Like the days when he prayed for the gift of a family, just to fill up their lives with a young baby's cry. And she would look up and say, you're a daddy today. And Willie was heard as he cried. Thank you for Willie, my sweet little Willie, he's needing our loving today. Now I promise forever my hand and my heart, and little Willie, I'll never go away. Oh, but 70 years, that's a lifetime together. There's a time for hello and a time for goodbye. So they whispered these words in the silence of morning. We'll be together someday by and by. Then he smiled at the sun, and as he faded away, she tried oh so hard not to cry. Don't leave me, Willie, my sweet charming Willie, I'm needing your loving today. Oh, you promised forever your hand and your heart. Why, Willie, did you